going to switch gears quite a bit here and move into some findings from our ongoing NIH-funded study now. Although, to keep the Democratic theme going, it is CBPR, and that means there is some democratic process built into doing the research with this population. So this is our study logo, and it's a $1.4 million NIH study funded through NINR going through 2009. These are the first set of results that we have to report. Last year I was here and we just talked about the study briefly. The women involved in the study helped design the logo through much trial and error and revision, but they're very proud of it and they really like it. The study team, we have a number of people with varying expertise. Dr. Barbara Lutz is here and she'll be presenting. She is here and she'll be presenting following my discussion. So I'm not going to talk too much about the methods aspects of how we did some of the focus group work, because she's really going to come back and focus on that. These are members of the study team. For those of you familiar with CBPR, you'll understand that many of the women that we hire, at least in this project, it's to look at welfare to work transition and what's happening during that transition. And we hire women who've been through that program to work on the study, and that's exclusively pretty much, other than the public health intervention nurses who we have working on the intervention piece too. And I think Michelle is here. I don't know if Kathy is here. So we had a couple of aims with this study. The first was to redesign a current welfare transition program clinical health screening tool that was in use. And we wanted to redesign it so that it was culturally relevant, sensitive, and acceptable for use in testing the program, the welfare participant-centered health program intervention that we wanted to do using a participatory research methodology. But we had to do that first. I'll talk a little bit later about some of the why, but the health screening process throughout the welfare transition program across the country it varies widely. There's no systematic approach to it. And at least in our area where they were conducting some screening, the tools that they were using were really highly questionable in terms of whether women would even want to fill them out. Some of the language and the way it was structured was not respectful at all, and we'd done some prior focus group work to see what they thought about that whole process, and they wanted it completely overhauled. So this is a response to that request. The second aim was to test the intervention, which was a comprehensive health program among women in the welfare transition program, to look at lots of different outcomes. One of those includes increasing the rates of voluntary screening. So you may have it on site, but do women really want to do it if it's going to insult them in all kinds of ways? No. Increasing the ability to navigate the Medicaid system was another area that they wanted us to address. Improving functional and health status over time and increasing employment duration among women who have chronic health conditions and are involved in the welfare transition program. So a little bit of background. There's so much research on this, but basically the vast majority of people who receive welfare or TANF or are in the WTP program, there are all kinds of acronyms you can use, are women. There's a very high prevalence of mental and physical health conditions in this population, 2 to 4 times higher than what you see in the general population of women. And since welfare reform in 1996, the emphasis is really, in any of these programs, on immediate placement in a job. It does not matter if they have skills that are built. It does not matter if they have health issues that they're going through. The goal is to put them in a work situation, regardless of what it is, so that states and counties and local agencies can report their TANF caseload as being lower. But we do know some things that are important in terms of this group and their health. Some studies have shown that women with health problems are much more likely to be sanctioned, and that is to have important benefits taken away, like food stamps for their kids, and work for shorter periods of time after a welfare exit. So those with health problems in particular are more vulnerable as they move through the program. 48% of women receiving TANF reported poor health was their primary limitation to actually successfully leaving welfare, and not just recycling through rather rapidly, going from job to job and needing to come back to the welfare system in between. Federal agencies responsible for TANF call for programs to support health as women move into employment, but there hadn't been any work done in that regard. So what we had to first set out to do was redesign this whole screening tool, right? I mean, it's not something you can use, and it certainly wasn't respectful of this group. So during this process, what we focused on, we went into it with some broad ideas about what we wanted to do, and we had to come out with a clinically valid screening tool. We looked at what content we had to identify as important. We make large assumptions about what kind of health information is needed on a health screening tool. And so we wanted to put that all into question. Again, the wording of the questions, how do you word these things so that they are respectful and culturally sensitive? The order of the questions, which seems really funny, but it's not, and maybe we'll tell you a little bit about that. There were introductory narratives, too, to specific question sets, and in the results, when I talk about that, what that means is women told us in the focus groups, if you tell me why you're asking that question, then I don't think it's offensive, but if you don't explain to me why you need to ask me that, then I don't want to answer it. And so just some simple things that we can do, you know, to explain why we're asking things. And then we needed to also look at the acceptability of existing valid and reliable screening tools like the BDI-2 for depressive symptoms. We had to have valid screening tools, and we needed to know how they felt about that and whether they would be acceptable. So this is what we did. We had three different rounds of focus groups, and within each of those rounds, we held three focus groups. Each round, and I'm not sure I can really do this with a mouse, but each round, so here we started out saying, you know, what even needs to go on this tool? What are the content areas of health that they think are important to go on? The second round of three focus groups we concentrated on, and how about the order, and how the wording is, and whether narratives need to be introduced. Is it okay to ask you this before I ask you this, or, you know, what's involved in that? And then the third round of focus groups really focused on specific wording. Is this understandable? Is this clear? Can you fill it out? Do you understand it? That kind of thing. There were about 8 to 10 women per focus group. We had 10, but for the purposes of developing the tool, we had 9. And there were 61 women who participated. That's what we just talked about. We did have some a priori guiding principles, and some of those were outlined in Kruger's focus group toolkit. And then Sandalowski and Barroso have a typology of qualitative findings. I mean, focus group data is qualitative data, and so you have to really come at it from a qualitative perspective, which is what Dr. Lutz is going to talk much more about. So she'll revisit this in her talk. This is what we did. We tape recorded and transcribed. We took field notes, but I think she's going to talk a little bit more about that. The team discussed impressions of major points within 24 hours of each focus group, because your memory, you know, mine at least, isn't that great, and I'll forget. And so we got together very quickly after those to make sure that we captured what happened. The PI and myself and Dr. Lutz conducted analyses independently also, and we met together with the members of the research team to plan how we needed to proceed with the next focus group. And then we identified some major themes, which is what are the highlights of what I'm going to show you today. These are the demographics. about 30 years old, the sample characteristics of this group, 92% were not married or single, divorced. 70% were black or African American, 25% white and Hispanic Latino, about 5 to 7%. Household income was about $750 a month, and that's not unusual. Education, many had some college or technical training that they had gone through. About 2.2 kids as a mean, and 38% had 1 to 2 chronic health conditions, and 36% had 3 to 4. So the women we asked to come to the focus groups were I think we had an inclusion criteria of you had to have at least one chronic health condition. I'm trying to remember. That's what we're doing in our trial right now, so I have that really well memorized. Content areas. These are the things that women told us. They said, you know, when you hand me this tool, I want it to have things in there that are important to me. Not what you need, but what I need from you. So we focused heavily on that. And then process issues really evolved around, they said basically to us, show me a little respect and try to understand my needs. I mean, that's what came out of the focus groups largely. And to follow up on that, we really had to look at addressing the context of their lives, and that included more than what you typically find on any kind of a health history form or a health screening tool. They wanted us to take a look at stress, depression, which we had planned, some of their physical health concerns, and they also did want to address some of their lifestyle and behavioral kinds of concerns also. We asked about their health goals and specific concerns related to their current state of health, stressors, and how they handle stressors. Those are things that you don't find typically in a healthcare setting. And they reflected on what they did in response to their stressors by going through that process when they were filling out the tool. They really, really liked that. They thought that was helpful for them. Many of them said it was the first time they ever sat down and really thought about it. We also had to relate to the context of their lives, their past experiences with and treatment from social welfare systems. Trust and disclosure was a huge issue that came out of the focus groups. We knew that. We knew that we would have to gain their trust, and we knew that disclosing personal information was a sensitive kind of a thing to do. But they walked us through what that meant in terms of actually filling out the clinical health screening questionnaire. They wanted choice and flexibility in completing the tool instead of just being told this is you have to do it right now, or you know, no, you can't get any help with it. So we gave them that. And they wanted the ability to ask for help when they wanted it, which is really follows sort of a stages of change model. So instead of, they didn't really want us to say, you know, do you currently smoke? How many cigarettes do you smoke? Or approach it from that kind of a point of view. They thought they would be judged in doing that. They wanted us to provide some information about smoking, let them assess their own risk factors, and then ask them, is this something you're wanting to work on right now, you know, and if so, we'll do that. If not, we'll put it off. And so there were things in the tool like that. These are just a few examples. One of the important things was making sure that as we moved this into the trial portion of the study, that women understood this questionnaire was developed by women in the WTP for women in the WTP. So the first things on this set of screening questions relate to what their specific health issues are in the here and now. What is it that you need me to address for you? And what are the health goals that they have for themselves? Many of them really hadn't given that a whole lot of thought in the focus groups, but as we're beginning to get data in from the trial, probably 90% of them talk about what their own health goals are now, so they're really thinking about that. This is just an example of what some of the other areas look like. So we give information. They really like the format of giving a kind of information bits that are statistics from different sources about their risk factors, and then asking them, is this something you're concerned about? If yes, do you want some more information about it? And would you like, would you like us to even calculate your BMI, or is that just going over the line today? Do you want to do that later? The bottom line of what all of this means, the main theme, is we go into screening, I think all of us here, thinking it's an event, right? Well, we're going to conduct health screening, and it's an event, and then we're done. And what they told us very clearly is that screening is a process, and they wanted us to approach it as a process so the trust and disclosure could be built over that period of time, even though it's about an hour-long process. There are points in there that were built in that helped them determine whether they could trust us. Little things like just putting a narrative before the question told them we were sensitive to that, and really approaching this, again, as a process and not a singular event. So we took that lesson home and are using that in the trial. And Dr. Alec will talk more about that.